Hi, it's Paul Bannis with GreatDad.com, and I'm here with my weekly session with my weekly podcast with mostly with fathers, but sometimes non-fathers, but with a fatherhood theme. And in the last couple of weeks, I've been talking to experts about the aging process and life after 55, when careers start to change, kids leave the house, and there's a struggle for finding meaning, especially if you've put all your ego into your career or, in my case, largely my kids. So I'm excited today to talk to Rob Schwartz, who has a great and illustrious career as an entrepreneur and has a lot of projects, which we'll talk about. But he also is the son of Maury Schwartz, who's very famous for that book that came out from Mitch Albom, I don't know, now 20 years ago, Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So welcome, Rob.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
So I am really fascinated by this subject, especially since I'm a little bit older and right in this cohort, and excited to talk to you because you got not only the experience of what your father conveyed to Mitch, but then also your own personal discussions with your father. And then you are also in this cohort and maybe kind of testing out the wisdom of your father versus the reality you feel, which I think is a great juxtaposition, because sometimes we read these books and we say, wait, well, that's not how it was for me. But tell me a little bit about how you decided to do another version. I wouldn't say another version, but another take on the wisdom your father had.
Right. Well, so first of all, we should clarify, it's not my take per se, but my father's take.
Right.
So what the story is that when my father retired, maybe much like the people that you're addressing in your podcast and your classes, you know, he was a bit at loose ends and he thought a lot about it. And he decided, he sort of figured out why he was at loose ends, what his discomfort was with aging, and what he wanted to say. And he wrote a book about it, a complete manuscript. Some people have, you know, misunderstood that I put this together through conversations or notes or something. No, my father wrote this manuscript.
Okay.
Word to the last word. And he wrote it years before Tuesdays with Maury. He retired in 1986 at age 70. He wrote this book from 1988 to 1992. I had great occasion to sit and talk with my father while he was writing the book. So I had a lot of insight into it. But later, after he got ALS, after he passed away, after Mitch wrote Tuesdays with Maury, which became an incredible bestseller, after all of that, it was already 5 years on the bestseller list, Tuesdays with Maury, and I discovered the manuscript in my father's desk drawer, rediscovered it, as it were, because I hadn't talked to him about it. And I realized that we had an opportunity to publish this book. I thought it had really valuable insight and information in it. And it took me a long time. I was living in Tokyo, Japan, working for the national broadcaster there, working for Billboard magazine, doing other projects, producing films. So I was very busy. It took a long time for me to get to the place where I could edit this book, and we can talk more about that. The book is called The Wisdom of Maury. It's my father's words. I write an essay at the beginning and an essay at the end to put it in context, to give some information about my father and my mother, who was important in my father's writing career. But it's entirely his words. I edited it. I slimmed it down a little bit. I made it a little bit more readable, but it's basically his words. And just to answer your question, so my dad was super active, vibrant person. Many people literally described him as ageless. And it was kind of a shock to him when he was forced to retire at age 70. This is no longer the case for universities, but in his day, they forced you to retire. They tried to make him retire before 70, but he said, no, thank you. But at 70, they forced him to retire. And he had to come into this understanding that society viewed him as an elderly person. He didn't view himself that way, but society viewed him that way. So he had to think about that. It was kind of a shock to his system. And at the beginning, he was very uncomfortable with that. And he had to understand within himself, why am I uncomfortable with that? And he realized he had all these internalized ageist ideas. Old people can't do anything and they should go sit in a corner and do nothing. And he realized that this was just so wrong and so poisonous, you know, like a lot of other things that have existed in our society that are just wrong, like racism, sexism, right? It's pretty much right along the same lines. Yeah. So he decided that he had to write a book to express to people that ageist, you know, prejudice was wrong, and also to give people sort of the benefit of his wisdom and his lifelong study of, because he was, you know, a social psychologist. So he really dug into the psychology of people. And he was also a very practical person. So, you know, we can go all through it, but he gives very specific techniques to remain vibrant and creative, you know, and he really had a life philosophy which connects with Tuesdays with Morrie. If you've read Tuesdays with Morrie and you start to read this book, you realize there's a continuity of the ideas.
I'm really excited to get into those techniques because I'm sure everybody's going to want to know what to do. But was there, he wrote the, interesting that he wrote this book or wrote this manuscript, and then he got ALS, and then he had those conversations. So was there a change? I mean, you would be the closest to know where the changes were in his attitude about aging or end of life, given the factor of having ALS, because quite often things like that are the things that, you know, really make things really vibrant and clear, having a deadline of any kind, and that's a morbid deadline. But
right.
So were there changes in his attitude toward aging?
So there's, I think we have to split it into two parts, because this book, it's called, you know, The Wisdom of Morrie, but he titled it something like the subtitle, Living and Aging Creatively and Joyfully. This book is about aging, and I mean, it addresses a lot of things across a whole spectrum of ideas and emotions. I mean, he discusses despair and loneliness and regret. He discusses all those things. But overall, his attitude towards aging is incredibly positive, right? He even says in the beginning of the book, like, when I was young, I thought obviously the best age in life is when you're young. But now I realize that there are a lot of advantages to this aging in life. And we could even say, in some regard, this is the best time of your life. So he was incredibly positive about aging, entering that phase of your life once your career is winding down or over, which I think is something that you address a lot. Having said that, we need to split that off from, you asked about ALS and his illness. And see, that's kind of a different thing for my father, because he wrote this book about aging when he was not ill.
Right.
But then he developed ALS, and there's a lot of things, both in talking with Mitch, and he was on big television programs. Some of your viewers, if they're over 55, may remember Nightline with Ted Koppel.
Right.
My father was on three times. And he says very directly, like, when I got this fatal diagnosis, it wasn't just like, okay, great, I'll just make the best of it. No, I mean, he was despondent, he was distraught, he was depressed, he grieved for himself, he bemoaned it. And he says, I made a conscious decision. I'm not going to let this defeat me. I'm going to have to, you know, get a hold of depression and not let it dominate and make the best out of what I have left. And it was a real conscious and, you know, fighting decision, not something that came easily to him. So anybody who thinks like, oh, you know, I'll just go with the flow, whatever, not at all. I think for anybody, any person, or let's say any thoughtful person who gets a fatal diagnosis, that's going to change the way you think. That's going to affect your mood. That's going to affect everything in your life.
Yeah. But I think that's important. Probably a first rule is you do have control over how you react to the situation. You cannot change or predict the day you're going to die, but you do have a choice as to how you look at this next chapter. You can give in to the popular opinion that it's all over, but there are ways to, you know, get around that and make that choice not to look at it that way.
Right. Absolutely. Now, if we're talking about a fatal illness, it takes a lot of wherewithal.
Yes.
Some people, as you know, feel that way about aging. As soon as their career is over, they feel like my life is done. And that's because, and my father discusses it in this book, that our society puts so much emphasis on career and success and money.
Money.
You know, my father's not against those things. If you get fulfillment from your job, that's fantastic. Yeah. But the point he wants to make is that's not the be all and end all of everything. And he certainly says this in Tuesdays with Morrie, and he says it in this book. And this may be something that is good for your viewers to hear, because this is something my father said a lot. and this relates to the ALS as opposed to aging. He said, at the end of your life, when you're on your deathbed, the size of your bank account is not going to make any difference whatsoever. But the time that you've spent with your loved ones, the people who are important to you, the people who you've shared meaningful experiences with, that's going to mean everything to you.
Yeah, I've never seen that, the research study or the actual course, and maybe it's just popular wisdom, but I've often heard this, that's the greatest regret, especially for men on their deathbed, is I didn't spend enough time with my family. And that is a sad, sad, you know, realization at the end.
Right.
When you could have done that.
That's one of my father's core ideas. And he expands that. I mean, some of the techniques that I'm going to share with you about remaining vibrant and creative relate directly to that. It's about sharing time with people you care about and also creating new connections. He's very much on the road of like, you don't need to stop making friends and learning and doing things because you're aging. And it is true that a lot of us don't make any friends after a certain age.
Yeah.
And it's necessary, you know, you can absolutely make new friends and bring people into your life who are significant and meaningful to you. And you share a lot with that somebody, you know, whether you've known them a week or 100 years, you know.
It is interesting when you look at the suicide statistics of men, and suicide is definitely a huge issue across all age groups. But, and I was just discussing this in a podcast a couple of weeks ago, there's a drop-off actually in the suicide rates, and people in the 65 to 75-year-old cohort actually has one of the lowest suicide rates. And I think after that, it goes up, probably more related to health than the spouse dying and a lot of other factors. But I think that is an indicator that for a lot of people, this is a time of freedom and fulfillment that maybe they weren't expecting.
Absolutely. And I mean, I totally agree with that. I'll put a slightly dark twist on it, but I think it is true that if you've made it to this age, you're probably not going to commit. You've survived this far. You're probably
okay
with life until something happens. Like, as you said, your spouse dies or your health declines to a point where you can't live the same lifestyle or something like that. But I think that's right. I think people who commit suicide are going to do it when they're younger because they just can't cope with life. You know?
Right. But I guess my hope is that once you are released from maybe the bad job or that pressure of money, even though, like you say, we're so commonly just evaluated immediately on how much money do you make or what your career is. But maybe when you are liberated from that, you're able to start doing some things that really are meaningful to your life. And hopefully that's not just fishing and golf, but something else that gives a larger sense of purpose. I guess that's what I'm really searching for is that purpose? What is that why after 55 that is going to really lead you into this next era?
Yeah. And my father talks about that directly. I can give a couple of whys if you like, but I think that my father would say that, you know, if fishing and golf really give you enjoyment,
sure, I don't buy that.
and then I'm going to widen it out a little bit philosophically because I studied philosophy. My father was extremely philosophical, but I think the reason for that, I'm going to go out on a limb here and give you the reason for it. I think the reason for it is that most people in our society, and certainly most men who are really involved with their careers, don't really think about their philosophical underpinning.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what is important to me? What are my values?
Right.
That's the basic question. What are my values? And if your values are money, then you are going to feel unfulfilled once you're not making a lot of money. But if your values are caring about people who are close to you, helping your community, then you have your whole life in front of you to do those things once you start winding down your career.
I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, all my coaching starts with that values orientation. I've got a class that I do for called Nominally, or working title is The Intentional Father, and this course for older people.
It always starts with what are your values, defining those values, and then
living in concert with those values, which is the clearest road to feeling fulfilled and feeling whole.
Exactly. Well, it sounds like we're on exactly the same road.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I told you I'd give you some techniques. We can lay them out, bang, bang, bang. But those are two of them.
Yeah.
You know, spending meaningful time with people who you care about and who care about you and helping your community, whatever that means to you, whatever community means to you, if it's a small group of people, if it's your town, if it's your, you know, county, if it's your state, whatever community means to you, if it's your ethnic, community or your, whatever community, helping that community in whatever way you can, that is a great way to bring value into your life and, to make connections with people.
Mm-hmm. So that's about connections. I've always heard that it's also the giving back part, the doing good for others. Is that a separate item, or is that maybe it's interlaced with community?
They're certainly interlaced, but that is one that he lays out is serving the community.
Right.
Some of them are very personal. Some of the techniques that my father lays out are very personal, and some of them are very social, like that one. So, and I think that since you said, your podcast and your courses are for people over 55, I think that some of the techniques that my father's thinking about are maybe for a little bit older people, but I think it's relevant. So we can go through them, bang, bang, bang. The first one that he talks about, and he did more intensely later in life, is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
You can calm your mind. And this is not connected to any teacher or any school or any spiritual path or any religion. I mean, meditation is something that can be purely a mental exercise of you calming your mind, focusing your attention. And it's just a great way to calm down, to be able to focus. And there have been many studies, one recently that said seniors, I can't remember what the age was, I think it was seniors over 75 who meditate tend to live on average, I think it was 5 or 6 years longer than people who don't meditate. I mean, that's a pretty stunning statistic. There's no doubt, there's a lot of studies that meditation is good for your health as well as good for your psychological well-being.
Yeah, that's
one of them. I think it applies to people across all age groups. That one doesn't have to do with 55. I mean, you could teach that to teenagers. It probably would help teenagers as much as anybody, truthfully. The other one, and this one is maybe a little bit more particular to aging people, is my father did some studies, interviewed some people, looked, read widely, and experienced a lot of things. And he felt that aging people, in his experience, somehow humor went out of their lives. And he thought it's so important to laugh, to find what you find funny and humorous, and indulge in that and just laugh. Laughter is actually very healthy, and we love to laugh. It's just pure enjoyment. So he focused on that. Those two are probably the most personal ones that you do by yourselves, right? The other ones, as I've already alluded to, getting involved with the community, serving the community or doing something in the community, spending more time with people you love, people who love you or people who are important to you, people who you value, who value you. And then another thing, and this is maybe for a little bit older people, but maybe not, and this could be for people who are retiring, is my father sort of figured out that people don't really focus on what they're interested in,
right,
despite the fact that they are interested in it.
Right.
So he's like, discover what interests you. If it's purely golf, then okay. But most people have a little bit more intellectual curiosity than that. Figure out what interests you, whether it's trains or World War II history or doesn't matter, and pursue that. Learn about it. Make connections with other people who are interested in the same thing. And then you can make more friends. And perhaps those people will become important to you, as I talked about earlier. So figure out what interests you and pursue it. Be active in it. Learn.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really important that you also define what those things are, like you say, that are really important to you rather than what somebody else told you you should do. I mean, if you always heard, you're 65, you should be playing golf all the time and you hate golf. I mean, that's obviously not what you should be doing.
Or anything. I mean,
anything. Yeah.
You should figure out for yourself a lot of this book, because as I said, my father was a social psychologist and also a therapist. A lot of this book is asking people to look inward. And like I said, he discusses all kinds of states of being that are not necessarily positive and tries to offer people ways to get out of them. Despair, loneliness, regret. He has sections on the book of like, if you have a lot of regret, what should you do? Obviously, regret is things in the past. How do you deal with that? And he offers solutions. He's like, use that to not make the same mistake in the future. Also, forgive yourself. A lot of people, a lot of psychologists would tell you this. For a lot of us, our worst critic is ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to forgive yourself. Fundamentally, people are trying the best that they can, but we're simple human beings. As my father used to say, you're going to make mistakes, and you may make mistakes in your relationship. Try and do better the next time, but forgive yourself. That's part of how my father writes about despair and regret.
Mm-hmm. So that's five. Are there more that you can mention?
The notes. I thought I got them all, but maybe not. I have six. Oh, right. This one is one that sometimes I don't stress because it may be less universal than the other ones, and it may not. You can tell me what you think. But in addition to all those things, which I think we can all agree are positive or great things, and my father came to this not super late in life, but relatively late in life, he says, develop a spiritual connection.
Hmm.
And whatever that means to you, it doesn't have to be what anybody else thinks, doesn't have to be an established religion, doesn't have to be something that's written in a book. Whatever that means to you, and however you feel you can develop it, try and do that. That's going to be fulfilling for you. So he is interested in, you know, a spiritual life in that way.
But it just, is that the idea of, like, in a Alcoholics Anonymous way of admitting that there's a higher power that goes beyond you? Or is it a different take on spirituality? Is more the interconnection of the world and the people and the plants and the animals and all that kind of spirituality?
I love that you broke those things into two things. And, you know, fundamentally, I understand what you're going with that. My father is very clear in this book that he's not going to tell you. Is it a higher power that's disconnected from us? Is it the interconnectedness of all of life? I think for a lot of people, if not most people, both of those are spiritual ideas.
Right.
Which one appeals to you? That's right. What he's asking. Like I said, it's a book that asks you to think about yourself. Which one of those appeals to you?
Yeah, well, I love that idea because I'm very agnostic. It would be hard for me to suddenly give myself over to, certainly to organized religion, but I do believe in some sort of magic of the world. I have another course that is on gratitude. And part of developing a practice of gratitude is really indulging in that love of everything around us that is from the simple to the complex, that it's just, we are so lucky to live in this time and place and moment.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to commit a little blasphemy here and not contradict what I just said, but just give you a different example. My father doesn't tell you in this book, go this direction or this direction, this is spiritual or whatever, but he did have his own philosophy of life. We can really delve into it if you want to, but I think it's suffice to say that the story that he used to love to tell in the Tuesdays with Maury time, when he was really sort of, you know, immersed in his spirituality, was the story of the two waves. I don't know if you've the story of the two waves. Waves bouncing along the ocean, all happy and joyful. All of a sudden, one wave sees the shore and realizes they're going to smash under the shore and they will cease to exist. And he gets super depressed, and or she, either one. And the other wave asks, what are you so sad about? You know, we have this beautiful bouncing along. And he said, you don't understand. We're going to hit the shore and we're going to be nothing. We're going to cease to exist. And the second wave says, no, you don't understand. You're not a wave. You're part of the ocean.
Mm.
That's a spirit, his spirituality in a metaphor.
Well, that is a different perspective on the role we play in life that is harder to imagine at 20 than it is at 70 when you realize you have your children and their children. You see the long arc of time, and it's different.
Yeah.
But related to that, a huge question for me is, and does he address this, is the fact that you have a shorter time horizon, and suddenly versus being even 50. I mean, there's a vast difference. I'm 65. There's a vast difference between the way you look at a time horizon and what you can accomplish and how you square that versus the temptation of just saying, I'm just giving up because I don't have a lot of time anyway. And I'll just lie here on the couch and watch Netflix.
Right, right. Well, certainly he acknowledges that. Everybody who's over a certain age, whatever that age is, acknowledges that there's more time behind them than in front of them. That's just a basic fact that you can't really ignore. But having acknowledged that, he says that you don't need to let that hold you back in any way. And as you said, no, none of us know how long we have. You know, he puts a lot of stuff in this book, which is not just a straightforward narrative. He has examples, different people's stories, newspaper articles, poetry, and he loves just to drop stuff in to try and change people's perspective. One of the stories is about a 95-year-old guy who's just graduated university who plans to become a doctor. You know, it's like he really has this attitude of, sure, this guy may not make it to being a practicing doctor. That's not the point.
Right.
The point is he's doing something fulfilling, which interests him, which, you know, maybe he can help people with, where he's expressing himself, he's learning, you know. So he tries to change people's mindset. Like, it's not necessarily fruitful to think about, I only have a short time left. Because one, you don't know if you only have a short time left. You could easily live to 105.
Yeah.
You could live 40 more years.
That's hopefully all healthy.
Yeah. It's a long time. So you don't know how much time you have left. And how does it benefit you to dwell on that?
Yeah. Yeah. That itself is a huge question. You always need to be like, what purpose does that serve to lose that feeling? These are huge, huge topics. It's just really very, very interesting. With all that, I mean, you obviously had a very strong relationship with your father. I'd be interested in how you perceived him, or what defined him as a really a great dad. I imagine that he was a very attentive father and helped you in your development.
It's funny. I could tell you some family stories, but also, you know, I've talked about him a lot now that I've edited and released this book. And I don't know, sometimes I feel a little bit, what's the word, like bashful or embarrassed about, because he really was like an incredible, wonderful father. And I know there's other people out there that have wonderful fathers, but we also know there's some people who don't have wonderful fathers. And that's very sad. I mean, the thing that defined him as a wonderful father was just like, is so excited to spend time together. Right. We spent a lot of time together doing things that I love to do. And, you know, I mean, your father is such a huge influence on me. I've done what I've done in my life because he exposed me to all different kinds of ideas and, you know, thoughts and, you know, ways of looking at the world. He was very widely read. And, you know, these things we would talk about, and he would even give me stuff to read, or, you know, and later when I was an adult, we would suggest things for each other, you know. But as a kid, if you're talking about him specifically as a dad for, you know, a child or, you know, an adolescent, it's his eagerness to spend time together. And also, it goes without saying, but, you know, just very loving. He was incredibly loving. And that's, you know, if you have that in your family, then you're blessed. We all know that, right?
Yeah. That's part of what my whole mission is, you know, it's not, I've had 50 podcasts, I have a website, I've created all these courses, I've got a book in the process, and how it could just be really synthesized into just that, is it's being physically and emotionally present, whatever that means, is just, that's the basic building block. I mean, obviously you've got to keep them fed and clothed, but that in itself is a challenge with all the other distractions, but being there is really key.
And I'm going to say something now that, one, you know, some people may feel is a little bit trite, and two, is not actually my experience, because as you said, I don't have children, but I have the experience via my father. The what you get back in return when that child just has so much love for you because they know what you did and they know what you shared. There's nothing in the world that's like that can replace that, you know, and that's certainly what I shared with my father.
Yeah. Well, it's a long-term investment. Well, I think that's a good note to finish on. This has been a really dense conversation. I really appreciate you spending some time with me, Rob. Again, the book is The Wisdom of Maury, and written by Maury Schwartz, but edited by my guest, Rob Schwartz.
Yes.
And you can find
the title. It's The Wisdom of Maury, There you go. Living and Aging Creatively and Joyfully. It's really got a lot in it for pretty much everybody, but certainly for people over 55, I think they will really get a lot out of it.
Yeah. And you can also find more information at wisdomofmori.com. And I'm sure you can find it on Amazon and all the rest.
Yeah, wisdomofmori.com is a website that I created. I've been on a bunch of television shows, Good Morning America, a bunch of stuff written in the press about the book. So there's a lot of media on Wisdom of Mori. You can order the book, yeah, on Amazon.com, Goodreads. And I'll ask people one favor. If they do buy the book, if they do read the book and they do like it, please review it on Amazon, Goodreads, Barnes & Noble, because that's the way to get the message out in this day and age, is to build up people saying good things about it on those websites and others, you know.
Right, great. Okay, well, thank you very much. Again, it's Paul Bayes at greatdad.com. My course on gratitude, you can find at greatdad.com/gratitude, and I've got a special for our $39 course. If you use the code GREATDAD, all one word, you can get $34 off or $5 for this course. And I really recommend it. It's a very important practice. If you don't find it was worth $5, even I'll refund your money. But I think you'll really, these are some of the key building blocks to living gracefully, living joyfully, and along with the ones that we've gone over today. So again, until next time, be present. Be a connected dad, just like Rob says his dad would always say. Thank you.